Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Today's podcast guest, Jenny Lee Keys, is about a big story. It's about anorexia nervosa, it's about mental illness, sexual abuse, how much the human soul can take, and translated into writing that helped her to recovery. Well, welcome to the Community Conversations podcast, Jenny Lee. I'm really excited about having you because our community centres always love to hear about lived experience stories. And of course, it's very brave to come and tell any story, and particularly yours, because it does centre around mental health and anorexia. There's some sexual abuse a part of it. These are big topics and big experiences that for a lot of people, they hope never to encounter. So I'd love to hear your background. Start us on your journey.
Okay, Kerry, well, thank you very much for having me here and providing the opportunity to share my story with you as well. It's a very big story, and quite often in these situations, it's a bit hard to know where to begin. So let's just start with why I think mental illness statistics are increasing every year rather than decreasing, even though we seem to have a lot more knowledge. You know, within the medical field, it seems to be one area that keeps growing rather than decreasing. And I think the reason for this is a lack of understanding of where we need to look in particular to what the causes are for this, and that educative value to society who are searching for answers as to why mental illness is increasing. And I don't think we're still looking at the real causative factors and educating properly in those areas. And I'll come back to that a little bit later on. But my story, as I said, is a long one, and I'll start with what I usually do when I do public speaking is my very first initial story as a two-year-old, because this was the prominent tearjerker, I suppose, that came back when I began to go through and look at my background and what contributed to my downfall at the age of 15 into anorexia nervosa. So at the age of two, it was a Sunday, it was February the 28th, I remember, because it was my birthday and I just turned two. And I was very, very excited, of course. I lived on a farm with my family, and it was the practice every Sunday to leave the farm and drive for half an hour to the local town where we all went to church. So I clambered into the back seat of the car next to my big brother, and my mother was in front of me holding my baby sister, so that dates me. And my father was driving, and for some reason on this particular occasion, I decided to share my story and what was happening with my mother. And as a little girl, I guess I started to babble out those words that I wanted to speak, and lightning fast, my father turned and hit me and ordered me out of the car, which I did dutifully. And I was to stay home that particular Sunday morning and close the internal gate once the car had gone through. So there I was at the age of two watching the car disappear over the hill and tears streaming down my eyes and the trauma of that, of course, would set the stage for where my life went from there. Mm-hmm. The car did return and I did go to church, and more confusion entered my life as I watched this person who had just treated me so badly, so welcomed by everyone in the community. And I held the secrets of what I wanted to share with my mother that morning, which no one ever addressed with me. And I didn't discover until I was in my mid-30s when it all came flooding back in the way that it does when you start to open up to, well, what caused all of this? And it came back through dreams and memory and the different work that I did. So that began my story. We left actually the farm. My father went into the ministry and we came down to Adelaide for 4 years where he trained for that. We then went to another country location for 3 years where he was the local minister. We then went to another one for 3 years, and then I came to Adelaide and became a boarder at a boarding school. So those different changes as well impacted me, because I was not only the minister's daughter, I was also a traumatised child with the main message when I was being sexually abused, no one will like you if you tell. So I took that over into every aspect of my life, and everywhere I went, I already perceived that no one liked me anyway. And so with that, you know, filter to the world and that perception of the world, I lived my life accordingly. Not that I knew it at the time. My family was raised on perfection. I was a straight A student. I was a top athlete and a top vocalist, but it never seemed good enough. So at the age of 15, having won so many events, you know, the junior champion, intermediate champion and senior champion at the local school that I went to, It was, I guess, that pivotal time when young girls are starting to be noticed by boys. And also, I didn't have any friends. Every time I changed school, I had to sort of start from the ground up again. So I didn't have any friends. Everyone was getting a boyfriend and I was the one left on the shelf. So that saw me catapult into anorexia nervosa. Not that I knew that that was happening at the time. So for the next 9 years, I lived that eating disorder with no one asking the question, what had happened to me? You know, I was obviously an athlete with, you know, about 62 kilos, I think, at the time, who could run and break records and jump and break records and do all of those things. And all of a sudden, I couldn't do it. I was a top netballer winning all the trophies. All of a sudden, I couldn't do it. And I went from being very strong and very healthy to barely there and crying all the time and very anxious and very uptight. But in the background of that, I was restricting my food. I was exercising morning, noon and night. I was looking over my shoulder all the time, trying to be perfect, wanting to gain the straight A's, wanting to achieve, but then hiding away when I could no longer do the achievements that I did. So my life became an absolute misery.
It sounds like it would be. And how was your relationship with your family, and particularly your father, during this time? How did you manage?
During this time, I was the dutiful daughter, I suppose, having buried the abuse, not only around the age of two, but I was also went on a holiday with my godfather and godmother at the age of five, where I was abused again. So I had a double whammy, if you like, and that was never addressed and never talked about either. So my relationship as I went was based on my day-to-day experience with my father. He was a very controlling man. Physically and verbally controlling, and I was very, very afraid of him. So that fear also determined how I lived my life and the choices that I made and the friendships that I made and the people that I related to and how I related to those people, particularly males. I was very afraid of them, but I was always looking for acceptance. So I was doing everything I could to gain friendships, to be accepted by everyone. And I guess the eating disorder, well, I know that the eating disorder was a reflection of trying to gain control back into my life, but also trying desperately to gain acceptance by everyone around me because I wasn't experiencing that. So I thought maybe if I change the way I look, then I'll get what I want.
So Jenny Lee, what was the transition? What was the change piece that led you to some recovery?
To recovery. At the age of 24, I was married somehow and living in Little River, which is just north of Geelong in Victoria. And I was teaching at Sunshine Tech, and one of my colleagues noticed that something wasn't right. So she asked me to accompany her to her first pregnancy visit with her doctor, and I thought that was a bit strange, but all right, I'll go and support her. But they dragged me in, and that was when I was first confronted with the fact that something might have been wrong. So I was referred to a psychiatrist in Geelong, and that was the first time that paperwork termed anorexia nervosa was handed to me. Mm. And I read that article and collapsed in a heap because I identified completely with that. Yes. And because of my age, this is a long time ago, so it wasn't well known as a medical condition.
No, not at all.
Anything back there. So I sort of stumbled along then for the next couple of years, wanting to be well, but not wanting to be because of the messages that I was carrying in my brain, but no one will like me. So I wanted to put on weight to get well, but that would mean no one would like me. So I was in this fear-driven environment. I did manage to put on some weight and get back to about 58 Ks, where I stabilised for a number of years. But what we didn't do with that psychiatrist, I was bullied into putting weight on back then. I had to weigh up every time I went in, so it was easier to gain the weight and deal with the other fears somehow and keep him happy than do anything else. So that was the process that was undertaken, and I believed them when they said, once you put the weight on, you'll be back to normal again. Mm. So I look forward to being the netballer again and the vocalist again and all of those things. But I now know in hindsight that because I didn't deal with the causes, wasn't given the opportunity to explore what had occurred that I developed an eating disorder in the first place, because that wasn't undertaken, I then developed a range of what I call associated mental illnesses. So I went down the gurgler of chronic fatigue, two-day migraines, where I was up against the wall belting it, asking for the axes to stop, you know, cutting through my head. I developed OCD in both of my pregnancies. How I got pregnant, well, we know how, but how my body sustained that, I don't know, but it did. I developed anxiety and fear to the nth degree. Everything was fearful. Everything was anxious. You know, my whole world
was
dominated by that.
And you were teaching at this point still?
I was teaching up until I became pregnant with my first child. And about 2-3 months into that pregnancy, I was so ill. I was being sick every morning, violently ill. The anxiety and the fear was just massive that I had to walk away from my teaching profession because I couldn't stand up. I was so tired and so worn out. So that was the end of my teaching career at that point in time. But as I was beginning to indicate that then developed and morphed, I had OCD for the first time. If someone said, Jenny Lee, you need 2 dozen nappies, I would panic until I'd bought the nappies, washed them, fold them and put them in the nursery. Mm. Or if they said I needed this, I couldn't sleep until I had. And this was new behaviour for me. But I just lived it. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't tell anyone that this was happening. This was just my unfolding experience at the time. I delivered my 2 children who were very healthy, and I was very concerned that my condition would affect them as well.
We're talking today to Jenny Lee Keys about her story, which is a big story, and she's sharing with us her insights on how she recovered. You had this OCD and you didn't even realise that was there. Now you've had your children. So what was the next step for you?
The next step for me was suicidal depression, which nearly took me. Mm. But the next step for me was selling our property at Little River, and we decided to come back to Adelaide. That was always the choice when we went, you know, when I was married to
go.
And
this is where your family is, in Adelaide.
And my family is in Adelaide. So we went to Victoria because my husband, the job that he was given. And we bought 10 acres at Little River and developed that and everything, had the children, but always with the intention of coming back to Adelaide when the children were going to school. I don't actually know why now, because it seems silly when I think about it, but that's what we did. And at the same time, I thought, I've got to do something about this. I was living this fear-driven, anxious life. I was wanting to end my life regularly. I was OCDing all the time, relocking. I was driving myself insane. So I booked myself in as an outpatient to Flinders Medical Centre in the eating disorder unit. Even though I wasn't doing an eating disorder, that was where I went. And I was assigned to a psychiatrist there who explored nothing at all, who was of no good at all, didn't look at the reasons why I was doing what I was. If I cried, didn't hand the t-shirts over and ask those important questions of what are the tears telling you. So I went on for a number of years again, and then we actually went to Darwin to live, and that was my breaking point. I brought the children home. I couldn't cope. The anxiety was so great, and the fear of what living in this different sort of environment, it seemed like out of Australia. That was my experience, and that was my warped thinking at the time. So luckily, we still had 2 acres at Coromandel Valley, and I brought the children home. And the turning point happened because I asked around, because then my marriage collapsed. And I said to a friend at the time, look, I want to know that I support these children emotionally through this change for them, and I need to talk to someone. I can't do it on my own. So a lady called Joan Hookstad, who practiced reality therapy underpinned by choice theory, was suggested to me, and she lived very near, only a couple of minutes away from my home. So I went and had a chat to her about the children and supporting them. And during that time, she said to me, I think you're doing really well with the children, but I'd like to help you. So she picked up something in me, and I just balked. I went, I cannot talk about me anymore. I'm done. This is just my life. This is how I have to live it. I just have to get through somehow. But an experience about a week after that changed that. Again, I was up in Blair, and I was having a morning cuppa with a girlfriend at the time, and she asked a question that we didn't know. We were just talking about our childhoods, our upbringings and all of that sort of thing. And she just said, do you think there was something that happened in your childhood, Jenny Lee, that has created how you're living now? I don't know how she knew to ask that question, but she did.
Fairly common question if you have some understanding of psychology and how people work.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that she did, but obviously she was doing more reading than me at the time. And she asked that question, and it was that turning point. I just catapulted off of the seat into the corner, hid in the corner and shook.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got up, I looked at her and we didn't know what to think or say. She said, I think you better go back to Joan. So I did. And with Joan's assistance and the way that her therapy worked, my story of my childhood began to be evident. And it was working, so she was looking at my thought processes to start with. How is my thinking directing my decisions and the way I live my life, primarily the fears that I was living under and believing in? We then looked at my emotional load and what emotions were guiding and directing my life. And then we looked at my behaviours, you know, the OCD, for example. What was OCD telling me? And Joan had a way of looking at the different illnesses and asking them their purpose and what their message was for me. And that sounded really weird to me at the time. But the more I got used to doing this type of theory, the more I learned about me and why I had ended up being the person that I was now at 37 years of age. We also looked at the physical symptoms that I was still carrying. And I was to learn that each of these areas had clues in them. We looked at my story and my story to date, my relationships in particular with my family as I was growing up. And we dissected and teased them all out. And when the tears flowed, she knew what questions to ask to find out what those tears were telling me.
Jenny Lee, you've just raised your family. Where was the relationship at this stage with the family?
The relationship with the family was still connected, but as I started to discover what was underneath, which was the sexual abuse, I made a decision to protect the family because I thought that what I was uncovering was not known. And so I spent the next 17 years actually finding out about my story, still attending family things, protecting those people that I felt I needed to because the knowledge was not there and I didn't want them to suffer as I was.
And so, and that's a very common response. People think best to say nothing, yeah. I'll just live with this, bury it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so, you don't know how to raise it as well. It's
for me, because of the people that had abused me and the family connection and relationships, I thought I was doing the right thing.
Of course.
So I weathered it all on my own. I had Joan to support me and a couple of close friends, but I lived a dual life. At home, I was still suffering, but I was masking up when I went out. You know, and then I was getting physically stronger. I was taking control of my life and getting me back into my life again. So those aspects of the healing were happening. But what wasn't happening was total peace in it all, because I was holding on to all of these secrets still and trying to survive in a family circle at the same time. And so I did get to a point, again, I had improved, I had recovered, I had confronted all the fears that I lived with, the physical symptoms, the suicidal depression left, the OCD left. I got on top of each of those, understood why they were presenting in my life and flicked them away, you know. I guess I'll just digress for a moment, because what I also discovered as I went through this was the writing aspect of my ability. So I began to write poetry, and very easily, and I would just lay it down really quickly. And so that was another way of getting my story out onto paper and out of me, I suppose, and the pain.
Well, you've since authored four books and developed programs, and so writing is clearly your gift.
Well, apparently it is, because so I'll just come back to here and then we'll go to the books, I suppose. I started to go down the gurgler again probably about 10 years ago now, due to my children leaving home and me not being now on my own and just my living arrangements around the time. And I ended up living with a family member for a short while. And while I was living with that person, it was getting increasingly harder to hide everything from my close family. Mm. So I was encouraged to share it. And it was during that process that I would discover that all the secrets were actually already known. And so everyone that I was protecting and thinking were also being protected by everyone else who already knew.
Right.
And so then I had to go through that level of healing of, now hang on, I've been looking after you all.
Did you feel betrayed by that?
Very, very, very deeply betrayed by the people that it involved. And that stands to today. So I needed to leave the family circle because I didn't feel I could survive in that and mask up. No one wanted to hear about it. No one wanted to support me. No one wanted to know about it. And I know that's a common thing. But my hope was that we could have come together and regrouped as a family, said, hey, this is the background. This is why each of us have suffered in the ways that we have. let's find a new way moving forward.
And are you still estranged today from your family?
I am, because the door did not open to that process. And I tried several times, but it remains closed today. And for my own health and sanity at the time, I couldn't live that dual life anymore. So I had to step away. So that's sort of, in a very quick nutshell, a story.
It's a very big story.
It's a massive story.
So we could probably spend all day, but we only have our time.
That's right.
And I want to get across, Jenny Lee, the work that you've done to give back in a way. And did it feel like it was giving back, writing the books and developing the programs?
Yes, I felt it was, because when I went through, you know, and we're talking a number of years ago, I think we've gained a lot of understanding in how to treat people who have mental illnesses / eating disorders, which are a mental illness, includes the mind. I think we've come a long way, but I think the best person that can guide and direct somebody is someone with lived experience, because we hear the story. And I guess when I work with people, I not only hear the story, I hear the in-betweens. And I know what questions to ask and how to direct the conversation, and where the tears flow, how to get into those tears. So it's that close association that you have. And that is why I'll come back to Joan. I didn't know for 2 years when I worked with her that it was her story. And that's why she was the person that could help me, because she understood me. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important thing, is understanding the why behind. And I never had my why until I was 37, 38 years old, and that made the huge difference.
So Jenny Lee, what would you like to see the government put behind this massive resources going into mental health? How do you think those resources should be directed?
Well, I wonder whether there needs to be more focus on bringing together people with lived experiences and really listening to those stories, listening to what really helped them, and to really nail programs that bring that insight together. And I don't want to discriminate against or people who... I felt this with my psychiatrist. You know, I felt like he'd gone through his schooling, decided to be a psychiatrist, and came out the other end and to earn this big money, but without the lived experience and the total understanding of what I was feeling, what I was experiencing, what I was going through, there was that gap. That understanding.
It's interesting that you raise that, Jenny Lee, because community centres are all about people being able to come to a welcome door and finding other people and connecting. So they really are an ideal space for this. We've actually developed a grief and loss program, that experience in grief, which you did. You had the grief, loss of childhood, of innocence, that can often lead to that mental health, but having that peer support. And it came from looking at AA, where that whole program is all about a buddy system, peer support, being able to help each other. So it's interesting, here you are saying, to be able to share with somebody else with lived experience.
And I think too, I mean, I went ahead and I have my website, jlkeys.com.au, where I offer a range of programs. And through those programs, my story is represented as well. So that was done that way to hopefully, as people go through, they feel like I'm right there next to them, understanding, because I've lived it already. And so I am bringing in steps that I recommend to undertake, because they're the ones
I know they work.
And I know they work, because this is what I did and how I did it. So that's one way of giving back, I suppose. I was also asked to write my story, and I balked at that idea, thinking, but books take, you know, 3 years to write. Why would I put myself through that? And then I went to Sydney to look after my daughter Sphinx Cats while she and her husband went overseas for X number of weeks. And I thought, this is it. I shut myself away for 4 weeks and I wrote my book.
Wonderful.
And I finished it. And I thought, well, that wasn't so hard. But I think when it's your story, you don't realise until you start that your story's there, it's ready to be laid down. It's actually an easy thing to do.
And you can write. So it was something you were able to do.
Well, that's what I discovered. Yeah, yes. In that process. Yep. Yes.
So, Jenny Lee, it's JL Keys, K-E-E-Z-S, and of course on our Community Centres SA website, we always have a bio and all of the information on our guests, so that will all be there. But let's talk about your books and your programs. Specifically, what would you like to highlight to our listeners?
I would like to highlight my books at the moment, particularly my fourth one. So the first one, Anorexia Unlocked, Understanding a Story Through Mind, sort of lays mine down and indicates to the reader right, this is basically what happened. This was the therapy explained at the end that supported my recovery. And this is the take-home message, is there's 14 pearls of wisdom in the middle, which I would really direct people to, because I think they're really good learnings that we could apply to a number of areas of our lives. That's the first one. The other two books, Recovery and All That Jazz, 50 poems, their meanings. I have had people read it and benefit greatly from the insights shared there. The third one is just 100 poems to help you. But my fourth one, Messages in the Night That Shape the Soul, is my story wrapped in a fictitious story around it. So that was suggested to me by a lady who read my first book and said, JL, I know your story. It's much bigger than what you've put here. So her idea was laying it down that way so I could more deep dive into, right, when you're doing suicidal depression, what will we actually see you doing? What, if I could stand there and watch you, what would I see you doing? How would I see you pacing around that yard and throwing those bricks at that? You know, it gave me the opportunity to be able to really deep dive into what did OCD look like? Yes. What did this look like? And give a lot more detail to my story and then wrap all these fictitious people around it, which helped bring out the messages that I wanted to share. And the main message is about relationships and relationship connections and how they impact our mental health. That's a whole nother topic.
Yes, it is. And we'll have to end it there. We could talk all day and perhaps we'll get you back for another one. So all that information is on your website. Just give us that website again.
jlkeys.com.au. My website is there. It's all laid out. The books are there, the programs are there, parts of my story are there. It's all there waiting.
Well, thank you for your bravery and generosity in sharing your story today. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for being a part of the podcast.
Thanks, Kerry. Bye bye.
On behalf of all the Community Centres SA teams, thanks for listening. Feel free to get in touch with us at communitycentressa.asn.au. We'll be back next week. But wherever you are, at home, with your work and in your daily life, we hope that we have planted a seed to enable ongoing community conversations.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.